Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, pop, music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions are brought to us by NPR.org and OnThisDay.com. Question number one. Valentine's Day is coming up this Tuesday, February 14th. What is the origin of this holiday? Is it A, it was inspired by a Shakespeare play? Is it B, it dates back to an early Roman festival? Is it C, it resulted from the actions St. Patrick of Ireland took? Or is it D, it was a product of Bastille Day in France? Valentine's Day, what is its origin story anyway? And question number two, it was on this very day back in 1964 that the Beatles played their very first U.S. concert. Where was that concert held? Was it A, at Shea Stadium in New York, B, at the Coliseum in Washington, D.C., C, at Chicago's Soldier Field, or D, in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park? Beatles' first U.S. concert in 1964. Where was that held anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today is the weekend of February the 10th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1916, that the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra presented its very first concert. The symphony was the first by a municipal orchestra to be supported by taxes. 1916, today. And it was 13 years ago today, 2010, that the remake of the song We Are the World was premiered at the opening of the Winter Olympics, 2010, today. Miranda Lambert's Platinum introduces our country music news. It's a new album release titled Ellie King, Come Get Your Wife. This is published in People magazine on February the 6th, 2023. Country. After hits with Dierks Bentley and Miranda Lambert, the X's and O's singer, who's always been a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll, has planted roots in Nashville. But she hasn't lost her edge. Just listen to the rockling Tulsa. This album became available on January 27th.
Principessa,
Luciano Pavarotti, Nessun Dorma, introduces our classical music news. It's titled 10 of the Most Famous Opera Songs, our roundup of the best and most famous songs in all of opera. This is published by BBC Music Magazine, Hanna Nepalova, January 24th, 2023. What makes a classic opera song? The kind that reaches beyond the boundaries of fashion and speaks to generation after generation? Is it melody? Orchestration? Text? Something else completely? Here are 10 songs plucked from many, many possible contenders that continue to soar in popularity centuries after they were first heard. Nessun Dorma, the song playing in the background now, closely associated with Luciano Pavarotti, who sang it many times in the 90s after performing it at the 1990 FIFA World Cup. Nessun Dorma, Let No One Sleep, is possibly classical music's greatest gift to contemporary pop culture. It actually comes from the final act of Puccini's opera Turandot, where it was sung by the Prince Caliph, who falls in love at first sight with the beautiful but frosty Princess Turandot. But it is often performed as a standalone work, thanks to its lush orchestration, its bittersweet harmonies, and most of all, its melody that, in its slow build-up to a towering climax, tugs with all of its might at the heartstrings. And then there's Voi Che Sapete, sung by the randy teenager Cherubino. This aria from The Marriage of Figaro is about puberty, involuntary bodily functions, and lust, specifically Cherubino's lust for the Countess, on whom he has a teenage crush. Mozart's music is elegantly simple, but beneath the swan-like surface is a tremulousness befitting the song's subject matter. And O Sove Fanciulla, another Puccini classic here, this one from La Boheme, his 1895 opera about a group of young bohemians living in Paris, sung as the closing number of Act One. This duet between the main lovers, Rodolfo and Mimi, is one of the most romantic in all of opera, a cocktail of ravishing orchestration and gooseflesh introducing melody. And then there's Flower Duet from Des Lieb's Lakmé. British Airways made it their theme song in the 1980s, but this serene duet for soprano and mezzo-soprano has continued to do well since then, finding its way into films such as Meet the Parents and television shows including The Simpsons. It comes from Lakmé, Des Lieb's tragic 1883 opera set in British India, and is sung by the title character and her servant, Malika, as they go to gather flowers by a river. But you'd be forgiven for not knowing that, given how rarely the full opera gets performed nowadays. And then there's La Donna Mobile. This aria from Verdi's Rigoletto claims that women are fickle and untrustworthy. That's not surprising, as it's sung by the Duke of Mantua, a rapist, misogynist, and otherwise thoroughly reprehensible character. So while the words might be pretty unpleasant, they clearly don't represent the composer's view. As for the tune, a popular showcase for the tenor voice, it is nothing if not catchy. And then there's O Mio Bambino Caro, sung here by Maria Callas. This aria comes from Puccini's 1918 one-act comedy about a Florentine con man known for his powers of mimicry, who changes an old man's will for his own gain, and that of his daughter, Loretta. O mio bambino caro is sung by the young Loretta as she begs her father to let her marry the love of her life, Renuccio. As such, its earnest tone and heart-rending melody provide a rare moment of poignancy in what is otherwise a pretty cynical little opera. And how about the Habanera? This aria from Georges Bizet's 1875 opera Carmen is all about the untamable nature of love and is sung by the title character, whose sultry allure it fully encapsulates. With its whistleable melody, which slides chromatically down a descending scale, it's one of the best-known songs in all of opera and has appeared in everything from films to adverts. And catalog aria. As famous for its text as for its music, this darkly comic bass aria from Mozart's Don Giovanni is sung by the servant Leporello to Giovanni's jilted lover Elvira in an attempt to encourage her to forget his master. Against a busy and light-hearted musical background, Leporello details Giovanni's endless sexual conquests around the world. Then there's Queen of the Night aria, with its rapid stratospheric staccatos reaching up to that elusive high F. This aria from Mozart's The Magic Flute has tested the mettle of many a fine soprano. What better way to depict the white-hot fury of the Queen of the Night? Hell's vengeance boils in my heart, she rages, as she exhorts her daughter, Pamina, to assassinate Sarastro, the Queen's rival, and we have no doubts believing her. And last but not least, there's Largo al Factotum. Some of us, including myself, first came across this aria in the opening credits of Mrs. Doubtfire, thanks to the hyper-exuberant Robin Williams. In fact, it's from Rossini's The Barber of Seville, and is sung by the barber himself, Figaro, as he makes his grand entrance, with its irrepressible drive and enthusiastic repetitions of Figaro. It is one of the sunniest, most infectiously optimistic moments in opera. And in music research and technology news, We have this article titled, To Treat Musicians' Injuries, One Therapist Takes Note from Pro Athletes. Overuse injuries are common among musicians, but often go undiscussed. A new approach wants to change that. This is from NBCNews.com by Akshay Sial and Susan Wagner on the 5th of July, 2022. In Emily Duncan's hands, playing the flute looks like one very cool job. At 28, Duncan, a New Yorker and Juilliard graduate, has taken her career around the world and across musical genres, performing in classical concert halls and off-Broadway folk musicals, even touring with a symphony orchestra that played only David Bowie songs. A lifelong musician, Duncan was living her dream until a simple injury, which he now knows could have been prevented, nearly ended it all. One of Duncan's hands had stopped working. Her symptoms started as occasional tingling in her fingers and slowly progressed to frequent pain and numbness throughout her hand. The impact on her ability to play and her emotional well-being was profound. It was pretty devastating, Duncan said. For me, being a musician is not just a job, but also a vocation and a way of life. For the next 4 years, Duncan kept her injury a secret from her fellow musicians as she endured countless doctor's visits, physical therapy appointments, nerve tests, and painful steroid injections. Even so, no one could give her a definitive diagnosis to offer her safe, long-term pain relief. One other option was surgery, but she was terrified it might permanently damage the nerves in her hand and her ability to play music. In pain, emotionally distraught with her career on hold, Duncan reached out to an occupational therapist at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City, who was researching an unusual protocol for treating injured musicians. She treated them like professional athletes. Aviva Wolf had pioneered an innovative approach to treating sore hands and arms. She used advanced motion analysis and technology more commonly employed in professional sports or for movement disorders like Parkinson's disease. When Wolf, who trained as a hand therapist, first saw the equipment in her lab at HSS, she recognized its untapped potential. I mean, no offense to the feet, but there are only so many things you can do with your legs, like walking, kicking, dancing. But our hands and arms? We do hundreds and hundreds of different things. Wolf began to research the biomechanics of the upper body. According to some estimates, as many as 90% of professional musicians suffer from an overuse injury because of improper form or bad posture. Wolf said it's also a big problem among amateurs, especially those who are self-taught. New York City proved to be Wolf's mecca for studying professional musicians with upper extremity pain, particularly violinists, pianists, keyboard players, and guitarists. The most common of these injuries include carpal tunnel syndrome, tendonitis, or bursitis of the shoulder or elbows. Birds Turn, Turn, Turn introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, David Crosby, Iconoclastic Rocker, Dead at 81. Cros was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of both the Byrds and Crosby, Stills and Nash. This is written by John Dolan and Andy Green in Rolling Stone magazine on January the 19th, 2023. David Crosby, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist who helped shape the sound of 60s rock and beyond, died Wednesday night at the age of 81. A source close to Crosby confirmed the musician's death, the Rolling Stone, but did not disclose a cause. Crosby was a founding member of the Byrds, playing guitar and contributing harmony vocals to their most enduring songs, including 8 Miles High. So you want to be a rock and roll star? And Turn, 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 the song playing in the background now. Mozart's Piano Sonata No. 11 in A introduces our local music news. It's titled Sylvia Milo's The Other Mozart. This is coming up on February the 17th at 8 p.m. with a post-show talk. And on February the 18th at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m., both of these days at Stewart Theater. This article is written by Sharon Moore at NC State Live on the 30th of January, 2023. This strikingly beautiful, New York Times, one-woman play is the true untold story of Nannerl Mozart, the sister of Amadeus, a prodigy, keyboard virtuoso and composer. This delightful play uses stories and lines pulled directly from the Mozart family's humorous and heartbreaking letters to tell an important story almost lost to history. And trust us when we say you don't want to miss the magnificent 18-foot dress. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, Valentine's Day is coming up this Tuesday, February 14th. What is the origin of this holiday? Is it A, it was inspired by a Shakespeare play? Is it B, it dates back to an early Roman festival? Is it C, it resulted from the action St. Patrick of Ireland did? Or is it D, it was a product of Bastille Day in France? Correct answer. Answer B. It dates back to an early Roman festival. As noted in a February 14, 2022 article by Arnie Seipel in NPR.org titled The Dark Origins of Valentine's Day, Valentine's Day is a time to celebrate romance and love and kissy face fealty. But the origins of this festival of candy and cupids are actually dark, bloody, and a bit muddled. Though no one has pinpointed the exact origin of the holiday, one place to start is ancient Rome. Those early Roman festivals were drunken feasts involving violence. The ancient Romans may also be responsible for the name of our modern day of love. Emperor Claudius II executed two men, both of whom were named Valentine, on February the 14th of different years in the 3rd century. Their martyrdom was honored by the Catholic Church with the celebration of St. Valentine's Day. As the years went on, the holiday grew sweeter. Chaucer and Shakespeare romanticized it in their work, and it gained popularity throughout Britain and the rest of Europe. Handmade paper cards became the tokens du jour in the Middle Ages. Eventually, the tradition made its way to the New World. The Industrial Revolution ushered in factory-made cards in the 19th century, and in 1913, Hallmark Cards of Kansas City, Missouri, began mass-producing Valentines. February has not been the same since, and so the celebration of Valentine's Day goes on in varied ways. Many will break the bank buying jewelry and flowers for their beloved. Some will celebrate in an SAD, that Single Awareness Day, way, dining alone and binging on self-gifted chocolates, while others will find a way to make peace with singlehood in a society that wants everyone to partner up. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in 1964 that the Beatles played their very first U.S. concert. Where was that concert held? Was it A, Shea Stadium, New York, B, the Coliseum in Washington, D.C., C, Chicago Soldier Field, or D, San Francisco's Golden Gate Park? Correct answer, answer B, the Coliseum in Washington, D.C. As noted in History.com, the group made their first public concert appearance in the United States on February the 11th at the Coliseum in Washington, D.C., and 20,000 fans attended. So let's close out today's program with a live recording of their standard opener for their first tour, Twist and Shout. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-7777.